Good morning. Welcome to Focus 580. This is our morning talk program. My name is David Inge. Glad to have you with us. It's estimated that there are millions of people, tens of millions of people, who suffer chronically from insomnia. It takes an enormous physical, mental, and also monetary toll, yet medical science has yet to determine its underlying cause. Doctors say that they still don't know if the treatments that they prescribe really work or if they help. Why they do. This morning in this hour of Focus, we will spend some time talking about a condition that has long been trivialized, even though it affects many, many people. And our guest is Gail Green. She is professor of literature and women's studies at Scripps College in Claremont, California. She's published books on Shakespeare, on women writers, and also on scientific issues. And she is the author of a recently published book. Its title is Insomniac. It's published by the University of California Press. And it does several things. It talks about insomnia, the dimensions of insomnia, what it is, what medical science does and doesn't understand, the kind of treatments that are available, but it is also, in part, a personal account of her experiences with insomnia. In addition to being professor of literature and women's studies, she is also a member of the American Academy of Sleep Medicine. That is a professional medical society for researchers and clinicians. She's also the patient representative on the board of the American Insomnia Association, and she's joining us this morning by telephone. And as we talk, questions from listeners, of course, are welcome. The number, if you're here in Champaign-Urbana, where we are, the number to call is 333-9455. We do also have a toll-free line, and that one is good anywhere that you can hear us, and that is 800-222-9455. So again, 333-9455 here in Champaign-Urbana, and also toll-free 800-222-9455. Professor Green, hello.
Hello.
Thanks very much for talking with us.
My pleasure.
We appreciate it. I think that I feel fairly certain that probably almost everyone at some time has had difficulty sleeping. But there's a big difference between occasional sleep problems and chronic insomnia. For someone who has not experienced that, what's it like?
Well, you just can't count on sleep ever. I mean, you can count on sleep not coming always. I mean, it's very undermining, and it's odd because most of us kind of we get used to it and we kind of adjust to it, and we stop talking. If we ever did talk about it, we keep it to ourselves because there's something kind of shameful about it. Like, what's wrong with you that you can't do something that's so normal and easy for other people? And then there's a kind of a stigma attached to it that you must have something on your mind. Maybe you have a guilty conscience. There must be something troubling you. So we end up kind of keeping it to ourselves and kind of going along with it. But everybody knows what lack of sleep does to you. I mean, it really cuts you off at the knees. You don't have your mind, you don't have your mood, you don't have your motivation, you feel kind of gutted in a way. And yeah, a lot of us go through our lives in that kind of state and kind of soldier through because, you know, there really aren't terribly many helpful solutions out there from doctors. A lot of people just sort of give up going to the doctors or never go at all.
Mm-hmm.
Huge rate of people with sleep disorders, like 7 out of 10 do not consult doctors, which is a real kind of statement about our experience with doctors or, you know, what our expectations of doctors. So it's kind of a rotten thing to live with, really, and it affects our performance in the workplace hugely because anybody who's, you know, linked to a kind of 9-to-5 or 8-to-5 kind of job where they have to perform early is going to get pretty badly mangled by this problem. Lots of us find more flexible schedules. I mean, the lucky ones, you know, us find more. I'm an academic, so I'm very lucky. You know, I can schedule late classes and evening classes, and the more control I have over my sleep schedule, the less of a problem it becomes the minute I have to be, you know, like this morning. It's great. It's early in California, I should tell you.
I'm very sorry to force you into doing this interview so early in the morning.
I'll get through it. This is fine. But yeah, it's a miserable thing to live with. I mean, just take, you know, those of you who've had a couple of nights, you know, now and then, just sort of take that and extrapolate it out over forever, and that's kind of what you get with a chronic insomniac.
Well, and I think also probably people need to understand that in addition to extreme fatigue, as if that's not enough, there are a range of physiological problems. It really takes its toll on the body of long-term sleeplessness.
Yeah, it does. I mean, this is one of the things we've been told forever. Oh, nobody ever died of insomnia. That's one of those toughen up, get a grip, you know, pull up your socks bits of advice. But, in fact, sleep deprivation does terrible things to the body, as sleep science is now turning up. Like, it compromises the immune system. Even a little bit of sleep throws the immune system off. I mean, to the point where if you're going to get a flu shot, make sure you get sleep before you get that flu shot, or it won't take as well. It makes your hormones just wildly imbalanced. I mean, you get too much cortisol, you get too little growth hormone. That's a terrible combination. You want it the other way around, actually. And that happens as we get older, that hormonal balance gets thrown out of whack that way. We get, you know, higher levels of stress hormones and lower levels of growth hormone. And what that means is that sleep deprivation actually hastens the aging process, makes us old before our time, makes us more insulin resistant, and it makes us ravenous. I've always known this. I mean, this is where if they'd talk to insomniacs, they'd find out some of these things a little earlier. But, I mean, most insomniacs know that, you know, they get this raging hunger when you have 2 or 3 hours of sleep. It's and now research is able to tell us exactly the hormonal imbalance that makes that happen. It's real. It's observable. It's measurable. And, of course, it makes it very difficult to control one's weight. So it becomes a kind of risk factor for obesity, for diabetes, for hypertension. You know, so maybe you don't drop dead of it the next day, but it may be taking years off your life.
Yeah. I think there are two numbers here that I think that say a lot about just how common sleep problems are, but also they tell you something about where our priorities are in how we think about it. And the numbers I'm thinking about, one number is $123 million, and that's how much the manufacturer of the sleep medicine Ambien spent in 2005 advertising their product. So just to let people know, we have this wonderful thing for you. $20 million, however, that's the amount of money that the National Institute of Health spent on insomnia research in the same year.
Yeah. Is that amazing? I mean, $20 million is, you know, pocket change to a drug company. I mean, it's just a sign, and, you know, the drug companies are researching insomnia, of course, but they're looking, you know, in very specific ways for things to target it, which is great. I'm not, you know, bad-mouthing that, but the NIH does not seem to be sufficiently behind this problem. I mean, partly because it's not perceived as life-threatening, partly because this society doesn't take sleep very seriously. I mean, you know, you snooze, you lose. Sleep is for sissies. You know, I'll sleep when I'm dead. I mean, there's all kinds of sayings that indicate that, you know, we really respect people who can do without sleep, who are out there, you know, competing, you know, in the business world. And doctors are not great about this either. I mean, they're kind of like have this sleep machismo. So it's not really a sleep-respecting society. It's so kind of competitive and get up and go. So I think the big thing with insomnia is it's always been seen as a psychological problem, a psychogenic or psychosomatic problem. So if it's a symptom of your underlying, you know, depression, anxiety, stress, worry, then what's to research? You know, I mean, it really is the patient's problem. Get a hold of it, get a grip. And, you know, the buck has passed back to the patient, and we don't have to research it. I think that really underlies the problem of the neglect of insomnia. But it's just a massive neglect when you think how many millions of people are affected, are made miserable by this condition, and how little, you know, the health establishment actually spends on researching it, trying to find the cause of it.
Hmm. I expect that probably if we'd stop people and ask them about their sleep experiences, if we had people identified a group of people who had occasional sleeplessness, not people who had chronic insomnia, but the people who said, well, every once in a while, or it happened to me recently, and then we asked them, well, what was going on? I expect that probably people would say, and they would explain this in terms of some kind of life stress at the moment. They would say, well, you know, I was going through a very difficult time at work, difficult time with family, you know, whatever it was. And they would say, well, I was very anxious. I was preoccupied. I was worried. And so that was what it was, mm-hmm. which, and as you say, that leads people to think that what's going on is that it does indeed have to do with worry and anxiety. For people who have chronic insomnia, is there some component of that going on? Does that at all explain what's going on?
Well, it might. I mean, yeah, a person might have, you know, a perfectly, you know, dreadful life, stressful, and, you know, be caught in situations over which they have no control, which is a recipe for stress. And if that persists and is all the time, sure, that might be the cause, you know, the primary cause. But probably underlying that is a physiological predisposition. You know, even with insomnia caused by stress and worry, there is probably a physiological predisposition toward fragile sleep, which is being blitzed, you know, by the situation. Because if you think about it, I mean, there are lots of people whose lives are messed up, whose heads are, you know, they're twisted in, you know, knots of sort of anger and rage. And I have a friend who's just so unhappy with her life and so full of rage, and her love life never works out, and her work life is uncertain, and there's pressure on it, and she has a long commute, and it's really a, you know, recipe for, it's a pressure cooker. And she comes home at night after this long commute, she turns on the TV, she says, it's like a mallet comes down, I'm asleep till the next morning. And I'm thinking, you know, if I were in her life for 2 minutes, I would never sleep again. But she has a robust sleep mechanism and a stress system that is just completely unflappable. So this is a physiological, you know, the sleep system is a physiological system, and some of us get tougher ones and some of us get more fragile ones. So if you peel down these folks who are being, you know, really spun out by stress and worry, I think you really will find this predisposition to fragile sleep. And then in some of us, it's just so chronic that, you know, there is never a night's sleep, even when I'm on sabbatical and in the country and everything is wonderful and I've had time off, you know, from teaching and I don't have pressure on me. I still have this very broken sleep system that just doesn't want to, it's not a generous sleep system, shall we say. It never gives me the, you know, the sleep I really need.
Just, I want to introduce again our guest and also pass on a little bit of weather information. Just before we got going here this morning, we had a severe thunderstorm warning for some parts of our listening area, and I do want to mention that the warnings that we had for southeastern Macon and extreme southeastern Christian counties have been canceled. However, we do still have a severe thunderstorm warning for Shelby County and Moultrie County in central Illinois, and that will be until 10:45 this morning. We do have possibility of some severe weather in our listening area for this morning, this afternoon, and tonight, and we'll do our best to keep informed on what's going on with the weather. Our guest in this part of Focus 580 is Gail Green. She's professor of literature and women's studies at Scripps College. That's in Claremont, California. And she is the author of the book Insomniac, which is about chronic insomnia, what it is that medical science understands and doesn't understand about what causes it, how it is that people try to cope. And it is in part, as she has explained, something of a memoir of her own experiences with insomnia. The book is published by University of California Press, and it is out now. Questions are welcome. 333-9455 is the Champaign-Urbana number. We do also have a toll-free line, and that's good anywhere that you can hear us, and that's 800-222-9455. We do have a caller to bring into our conversation. Let's do that. Someone listening in Champaign on line one. Hello.
Hi.
Yes.
So how much could your guest talk about how much do we know or don't know about kind of like the hormonal regulations mm-hmm. of sleep, because, you know, people think, well, melatonin, which is also, you know, which is used for international travel especially, has had some effect for some people, but others not. So if you know about that, could you talk to that, please? And then also, the one thing that seemed to have helped me primarily was advice that my doctor gave me was just everything not sleep related in the room, in my bedroom, should not be in there. That's no working at night, and you know, reading in bed, no TV in the room, you know, don't take the computer with your laptop with you to bed, and all that kind of stuff. And that's been really helpful. The other thing that he clued me into was to keep a journal and write down stuff before I go to bed to kind of clear my head, so to speak, so that it's kind of been captured so I don't have to think about it so much because it's been captured. And that, too, has been really helpful. But if you could talk a little bit about maybe some things that we know a little bit more about and what regulates our sleep patterns, that would be really helpful. And I'll hang up. Thanks.
All right. Well, thank you.
Okay. There's a lot there. Melatonin, some people respond to it, other people do not. So it's something you have to find out for yourself. The doctor can't tell you. I personally do not respond to it, but I know I've talked to a lot of insomniacs who do, so it's worth trying out. The hormonal, women have always known that hormones affect sleep, that at certain points in the month and in the life cycle, our sleep just goes crazy, or some of us who are prone that way. And yet it took doctors till 1998, researchers till 1998, to actually admit that, to say, do a survey and say, you know, this really, there really is an impact here. So that's the kind of thing I wish if, you know, insomniacs were maybe brought into the research process and, you know, if we were asked what we know. That was, but I can come back to that and talk about that if anybody wants me to, more the effect of hormones on sleep. But to get to the things that work for you, it's very encouraging to hear that, because what you were told was the kind of standard advice from experts, and usually what people find is that some of that advice works for them, but other of it does not, and so you have to, like, tailor-make your own. You have to trial and error find out what works for you. I have, it really is a good idea not to make the bed a workplace. Do not have it your desk and your, you know, telephone consulting. I mean, really, get work away from bed, and make some kind of a barrier between your work day, your busy day, and the bed. That stuff is, I think, really, really right on advice from the experts. Beyond that, there's a lot of variation. I mean, some people find that reading in bed is, as long as it's not your work-related reading, but, you know, reading the newspaper or reading, you know, an easy novel or something like that, they find that very helpful. I read the newspaper before I go to bed. I also like to watch a DVD sometimes because I work with words all day. See, the worry list you talk about, that is interesting also because that works for a lot of people. You know, it's like that's their way of being alone with themselves, maybe for the first time all day, and just kind of sorting out the day. For me, when I write something, I conjure it. I mean, I'm a writer, you know, and writing is work. So that doesn't work for me because it's the worst thing in the world for me to sit down and conjure every single thing, you know, that's on my mind. So I want to get away from words. So I put in a DVD, and my genre is chick flicks. I love chick flicks. They're pretty to look at. They end well, you know. I usually don't get through to the ending. I usually maybe watch like half a DVD before I go to bed. And I don't do that every night. It's usually the newspaper. And then they say don't exercise. Experts tell us don't exercise before bed. I find that a mild walk, you know, walk up the hill behind me is sometimes really nice to kind of shift the images around in my head so I'm not kind of still writing the same sentences I've been writing all day or thinking the same thoughts. I mean, you need to change the channel somehow, you know, from the day to the bed. But those 10 rules that the doctor gives you may or may not be the rules that work best for you. So you really have to find your own way with it.
Mm. All right. Well, hopefully that helps. Let's go on to another caller. This is someone calling on a cell phone from around Bloomington, Illinois. This is line number 4. Hello.
Yeah. Hi, David. Thanks for taking my call. Very interesting program. Just a couple of quick questions, and I'll go ahead and ring off and take my answers off the air. Your guest pretty much, I think, might have answered this one already, but I just was wondering if she knew as to the percentage of between the sexes. It seems, I would guess, and I'm not a profession in this, but I would guess it somehow adversely affects the females more than the males. I was wondering if there was any truth to that. And then also, if you have this problem, is this something that comes on in adolescence? I mean, are you born with it, or do you realize when you're in your 20s that you're suffering from it? And then I was wondering also, is there any tie into genetics for insomnia? I'm guessing probably not, but I was just curious. And I'll go ahead and listen off air. Thanks.
All right. Very good.
Yes. Half again as many women have insomnia as men. I mean, yeah, it's very heavily weighted toward the female sex. And it, yes, it does come on at adolescence. That's when the difference between male and female sleeping becomes obvious. I mean, up until adolescence, boys and girls, there's really no difference. At adolescence, you know, with that big sort of shot of estrogen and progesterone and the hormones, you know, flipping all over the place. I mean, this is where it comes on. It also manifests itself at PMS, just before the period. Again, the hormones are fluctuating wildly, going up and down. Postpartum is another terrible stage for women's sleep. You know, not all women, you know, are so reactive to their own hormones, I should say. I mean, even not all women insomniacs. This is a sort of subset of female insomniacs have this hormonal reactivity. I was one of them. Pregnancy affects sleep, sometimes for the better, sometimes for the worse, and then menopause. Menopause is a huge one. You know, a lot of women who have slept fine all their lives, suddenly they get to menopause and they find themselves sleeping the way I slept all my life, pretty much. So yes, it is, you know, related to hormones and to women. Yes, it is sometimes inborn. Yes, it is sometimes, very often, I think, genetic. Insomnia is not one thing. It may be brought on by many things. That's one of the things that's confusing about it, and I suspect one of the reasons that researchers don't go rushing into research. It is very difficult to research because you're not dealing with one thing. You know, you deal with research narcolepsy. That is one thing. I mean, that's one problem. You can isolate it. You know what you're dealing with. Or with apnea, and that's why everybody wants to work on apnea, because it's a simple kind of external thing. It can be measured in a way that insomnia can't. So it's very complicated, but there is a huge genetic component to it. In every study that's been done on familial, you know, the occurrence of insomnia in families, it does run in families. Now, again, it doesn't run in every family. You know, I mean, my parents were not particularly insomniac. They were not gifted sleepers either. They weren't those kind of sleepers where, you know, head hits the pillow and they're out. They were kind of normal, but light, maybe light, fragile a little bit, but they were not insomniacs. But the studies indicate that, yes, it does run in families. Now, the molecular bio, you know, there's no gene that has been isolated yet. Whereas there have been genes with narcolepsy, with restless leg syndrome, with REM behavior disorder. A lot of sleep has been, you know, a lot of sleep disorders are now known to be genetic. It seems only a matter of time before they will isolate something that will apply to some cases of insomnia. Obviously, the people who were born with it, which I think I was, judging from these letters, these amazing letters I found my mother had written my father when he was away at war for a year and a half, and she was detailing my growing up and, you know, what it was like being, you know, this little infant from 6 months to 2 years, and made me realize how sad it is for a man to, you know, miss out on his child's development while, you know, he's away at war. But anyway, these letters are all about my sleep. I mean, that's all she can talk about. It's this, I mean, I didn't want to sleep. I couldn't, you know, she couldn't get me to bed. She couldn't get me to nap. I had this surge of 4 a.m. energy. There were no night terrors. She never mentions a nightmare or a night terror. I was a happy, bubbly baby, but I just had this unfortunate relation to sleep, which seems to have persisted throughout life. So I would say, you know, in my case, it probably is inborn and genetic. And then I remember adolescence being just dreadful, got that shot of hormones, you know, and I was just wired, you know. I don't know how I got through high school. I really don't. So, yes, to all those questions, but you can see, you know, what a terribly complex entity we're dealing with, and why, since there is no one thing that insomnia is, why there is also no one remedy for it. I mean, we have to find our own way of dealing with it.
Yeah. Well, yeah, one of the things that I'd wondered, one of the things that that we know is that people have different biological rhythms and they have different sleep rhythms, and probably if all of us, if we could get up when we wanted and go to sleep when we wanted and sleep however much we wanted, everybody would be on some different kind of schedule. But the world doesn't work that way. We have families and we have jobs and we have responsibilities, and we have to adjust our schedules to those demands, whether our bodies are happy with it or not.
Yeah, yeah. No, that's absolutely right. I mean, that's another area that where they're really learning a whole lot about the circadian clock, you know. I mean, some people's runs late and some people's run early, and that is genetic. They are now understanding the genetic variations that are associated with delayed sleep phase syndrome and advanced sleep phase syndrome. So, I mean, there are some people who would sleep just fine from 5 a.m. till noon. You know, they would not be insomniacs in a world where they could structure that sleep schedule. They are insomniacs in the work world we have today. We don't allow a lot of flexibility about sleep, and people's sleep cycles and rhythms are really all over the place. And in my ideal world, we'd all have the kind of ability to find out, you know, how we sleep best, and then just kind of structure a sleep, you know, pattern around that.
Yeah. We have a number of calls. Obviously, we've touched something here this morning, so I want to get to other callers. Let me introduce our guest once again, Gail Green. She's professor of literature and women's studies at Scripps College, Claremont, California. She's published books on Shakespeare, on women writers, and also on scientific issues. And we're talking about her book, Insomniac. It is published by the University of California Press. It takes a look at what it is we know about insomnia and how it affects people. Partly, it is her own story of living with insomnia for a lot of her life. She's a member of the American Academy of Sleep Medicine. That's a professional medical society for researchers and clinicians. She's also the patient representative on the board of the American Insomnia Association. And before we go on to callers, I just want to mention some more weather information here. We know that today in our part of the country, there is going to be a good possibility of severe weather. We do, in fact, have a thunderstorm warning, a severe thunderstorm warning that was issued a little bit earlier this morning that covers Shelby County in central Illinois and also Moultrie County, and that will be in effect for about another 10 minutes. But we have a new one here. The National Weather Service in Lincoln has issued a severe thunderstorm warning for northern Coles County, Douglas County, southeastern Piatt County, and southern Champaign County, and that will be in effect until 11:15 this morning. Some of the locations include Cook's Mill, Posotum, Humboldt, Tuscola, Arcola, Tolono, Villa Grove, and Hinesboro. So do keep in mind that there is the possibility, if you're in these areas, for severe weather. That could include damaging winds and lightning, so you want to keep aware of what's going on with the weather. There is a good possibility of severe weather throughout the day today in central Illinois, so we'll bring to you all of the information that we have just as quickly as we possibly can. So again, this is a severe thunderstorm warning for northern Coles County, Douglas County, southeastern Piatt, and southern Champaign County. And we have some other callers to talk with. Let's do that. Go on next to a caller in Buckley. This is line one. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Thank you for taking my call. A very interesting guest. I'd like to underline what she had said about multiple causes and also warning to people not to go to specific doctors. I had a restless leg, and if you went to a neurologist, he said, that's the cause of your insomnia. And he gave me some powerful medicine that had side effects. And there were multiple causes, and that was just one of them. The other thing I'd like to point out, you said that insomnia is not a very deadly disease or condition. I was awake for 3 days, three nights without sleep. Mm-hmm. I took one step off the curb and I was almost dead in one instant, in 1 second. So that's a very deadly disease if you're so whacked out because you don't have sleep that you're not even aware of a car coming right at you. Mm-hmm. And also, I'd like to point out that most interrogation techniques depend on sleep deprivation. Sleep deprivation is a very terrible thing. They know that it doesn't leave any visible marks on the detainee or whoever, and they use it to extract information. The last point is that I found some relief with a drug called Zopiclone, and some don't. But I found that when I went to the pharmacy here in the U.S., it's not for sale. You can't buy it. Why a drug that can be helpful to some people in insomnia, you can't even buy at a local pharmacy? I'll take my answer off the air. Bye.
All right, just to answer the first one, the easiest one, Zopiclone is a isomer of the esopiclone, which is the basis of Lunesta. So you might try Lunesta. That, of course, it will cost you the earth, but it might do what Zopiclone does because those two drugs are so closely related. What you said about shopping around for doctors, I mean, getting the wrong diagnosis, getting a strong drug, we have to be so careful of that because we really have to be our own advocates. You know, the drug the doctor gives us may just be terrible for us, and rather than just accepting that, we have to just say, look, this isn't working, give me something else. And, you know, you'll get raised eyebrows. You're like, you're a junkie. What, you want something else? But only we can know what drug works for us and what the condition is. And doctors have a way of being so certain about, okay, it's this problem, take this for it. It's depression, take an antidepressant. Well, antidepressants just don't do a thing for me. They really whack me out in a very bad way. And it took me years to kind of, you know, get brave enough to say, look, they don't work. Stop giving them to me. Just, you know, can we talk about other kinds of medication? And then I'm very glad you said that about, you know, it's a deadly condition. I felt like I had to moderate my comments in a way because, I don't know. I just felt like I had to moderate my comments. But, yeah, insomnia kills. I think it killed Heath Ledger. I mean, the poor guy was just trying to get some sleep. He upped, you know, his doses. He mixed in cautiously. I wonder how many other celebrity, you know, I mean, it's usually written off to wild living or to suicide or to recreational drug. He wasn't doing recreational drugs when he, took that lethal dose. He was just trying to get to sleep. Insomnia increases accidents at work and on the road. It's not safe to be driving, you know, with too little sleep and under the influence of a sleeping pill. But just, you know, go 3 days without sleeping and you're slightly crazy. You're not safe operating machinery. We actually statistically have more visits to the doctor, more hospitalizations. We are committed to nursing homes earlier than other people, so it's a risk factor for nursing home placement because we can't, you know, provide for ourselves. I mean, we just get, you know, incompetent before other people do. So I agree. I mean, it is a deadly condition, and we can't let it get to that place. I mean, you know, when you're not sleeping for three days, I would say, you know, find a sleep medication that works for you. I mean, it will improve the quality of your life, but it also may save your life because you just don't want to go stumbling around the world in that kind of condition.
Hmm. Well, and not to put too fine a point on this, but I think maybe what you were reflecting on, and you certainly do in the book, is the attitude of a lot of the world, and even of some doctors, that that insomnia is not a serious problem. That I'm sure doctors have said, and people have said, well, nobody ever died from it. But in fact, as you say, and as you have explained, it has serious health consequences, And if you're seriously exhausted, then just managing to function safely in the world is very difficult. So I'm sure what the caller says is true, and what you say is true, and that it reflects the fact that as a society we have tended to maybe under appreciate just how serious a problem this is. Chronic insomnia, how serious a problem it is.
Yeah, it is amazing how, I mean, a doctor once actually said to me after he'd done a physical on me, and he says, well, there's nothing wrong with you except you can't sleep, you know.
Did you laugh, or did you want to throw something at the doctor?
I was stunned into silence. But I tried to imagine his saying, nothing wrong with you except you can't breathe or you can't eat or something like that. And it's not even on those forms for the physical, you know, when you fill out a form, when you see a new doctor, and, there's no question about your sleep. It's the great invisible, you know. It takes a third of our lives, and yet, you know, doctors don't seem to register that it's important. It can certainly be a killer. And, I mean, we're unsafe to other people as well. I mean, in terms of the family or something, I mean, an insomniac mother has a real hard time with her children, and her children suffer, family suffers, marriages break up over this problem, many of them. I mean, I interviewed lots and lots of insomniacs for the book to find out what they knew, and they know a lot. But one thing that kept coming up was, you know, my relationship. Well, yeah, he left. Well, you know, we couldn't work it out. We couldn't sleep together, and that bothered him, and so forth and so on. It's really toxic.
Mm. Well, let's talk with some more people who are listening, and we'll go next to Urbana here, where we are, line number two. Hello.
Oh, hello.
Yeah.
Thank you very much for taking my call. I just wanted to say, Gail, I'm listening to you, and I almost feel like I'm hearing myself saying some of these things. I agree. People face insomnia with tremendous skepticism that, you can't sleep. I'm so sorry. Then you just kind of roll their eyes. I've talked to my mom about this. She has stories about how I was 6 months old and staying awake 16 hours at a stretch. I gave up any kind of naps by the time I was 9 or 10 months old, and my whole life. I have these rhythms I go through where every 2-3 months I can just feel my sleep slipping away, and then I get 5 hours of sleep, 4 hours of sleep, 3, 2, and then I'm awake for 2 or 3 days, and then I just crash out and sleep for maybe 18 hours, and then, you know, maybe have a few rough nights through there, and then maybe I'll get back onto a rhythm of sleeping. But, this is the way it's been my whole life. I've gone to sleep clinics, I've talked to doctors, and I know exactly what you're saying about how people just kind of say, well, you know, you have no problems except you just can't sleep.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that it's adversely affected almost every aspect of my life. You talk about relationships. I was very, very lucky to find somebody that was understanding and was willing to marry me with this condition.
Mm-hmm.
There's been times that, she'll lay there in bed with me and be like rubbing my forehead or, you know, touching my eyes, trying to get me to relax, mm-hmm. just because I know when I'm laying down, like, it's just not going to happen. But,
mm-hmm.
you know, she's been for years trying to help me through this. Mm-hmm. And also, like I said, adversely affecting every aspect, even, I don't know, hormonally, body chemistry,
mm-hmm.
To try and get myself on an even keel. I remember pushing myself and being very much into fitness to try and just exhaust myself. I remember at one point in my life, I was working out 8 hours a day after I'd done an 8-hour day work day. Just to try and exhaust myself so I could actually sleep.
Mm-hmm.
And that since I've got a more intense job now and family life, you know, I really can't do that. So I feel like a lot of that turns internal, and I have a lot of weight control problems.
Mm-hmm.
And I really don't know what to say, because I feel like I've examined my life as best I can, and I've talked to as many people as I can. And it's almost like you come to grips, like with your child having autism or something. You say, "Well, this is just the way it is," And, you know, I'm not going to medicate myself. I'm not going to try and attack this problem. I'm just going to live with it because it seems like that's the least disruptive thing. It's a disruptive thing, but attacking it is worse than just living. But anyway, I just wanted to make that as a comment and say I'm going to find this book and spend some time reading it just because I want to kind of reach out. But it is an issue that's amazing. So thank you very much.
Thanks for the story.
Yeah, that was a very eloquent description of what it's like. If you want to see courage, try living without sleep. That's one of the things that an insomniac I talked to said. If you want to see courage, try living without sleep. It's just the great kind of unsung, invisible struggle that many people, when their bodies deny them sleep, struggle with this, and it is just unspeakably awful. The 6 months old, from 6 months you had this problem. The childhood onset insomnia is not rare. I mean, from the people I talk to, okay, that's anecdotal, not scientific information, but there are so many people who have had this problem from infancy, from when they can first remember, and yet when you look at the scientific literature says, oh, that's rare. And I think the reason for that insomnia researchers today are committed to the idea that insomnia is conditioned. It's a conditioned response. It comes on with stress, and therefore we can uncondition it, recondition it. And that is true for a certain number of insomniacs, you know, a kind of subset. But so the childhood onset insomnia, the one that you're born with, does not fit the existing paradigm. You know, it doesn't fit the existing way of explaining insomnia. So it gets written off. It is not researched, and that I just found a huge gap in their thinking and in their research. It impacts every aspect of your life. I mean, somebody asked me once, I say in the book, this is a somewhat cranky book. You can't help but get cranky when you get written off, and you know, as often as I have, and blown off. And some interviewer asked me, you know, well, are you a cranky person? And I said, which me are we talking about, the me who has had sleep or the me who has not had sleep? You know, because it's Jekyll and Hyde. It's just two different people. I mean, sleep makes me feel like I'm on top of the world, like I can take on anything, like I'm cheerful and ready to, you know, do my work. And no sleep makes me feel like I'm at the bottom of an avalanche, and where do I begin, and it's just all too much, and it's too horrible, and yes, I do get, you know, cranky. But I would say, you know, don't give up. There are creative, imaginative ways that people find of dealing with this problem, and I was kind of delighted to find them. When I researched this book, they were all over the place. I mean, there's, you know, of course, the whole world of alternative medicine, which actually does work for some people. Homeopathy, which I wouldn't have credited much, but there's a lot of people who swear by that. There's, you know, herbal kinds of things, those kinds of things. But there's also mind machines, which are a real trip. I mean, they're sort of goggles and earphones that kind of emanate sounds, weird outer space sounds and lights. And these are, I have been told, quite good for a racing mind. Like one of the insomniacs I talked to said, you can't sustain a thought with these things. I mean, it just completely shuts down my racing mind. You know, I get into bed and there are all these thoughts zinging through my head, he says, you know, but this really, really helped that. I tried it, and all it did was sort of speed up my heart. It was very exciting, and so it was. That didn't work for me. But there's also some kind of music that's made out of one's own EEG. They sort of weave the EEG into some kind of musical pattern, and some people have had success with that. Various kinds of music therapies. I have to say, I admire your courage for not medicating, because I do self-medicate, and it's the way I kind of, you know, have a career and have, you know, write books and teach classes. I couldn't be functional in the world without a little chemical help. I try to keep it down. I try to really know what I'm doing, but and I don't like it. I'd really rather, you know, not, but I couldn't be functional without it.
We have a couple of more callers. We have maybe about 5 minutes left. Let's go to the next, and that would be someone listening in Stell, line four, right here. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
I'm so empathizing with every word that's falling out of your mouth, Ms. Green, but I was taken to the doctor as an infant in arms with sleep difficulties and colic and all that kind of stuff. Then as a toddler, people had to rub my feet because of the sensations in my feet and legs. And, you know, there's been this kind of thing all of my life. I'm now 75, but I have finally concluded, say, in the last decade, that I found out that I have celiac disease. And I finally figured out that all of this sleep deprivation relates somehow to what is going on in the intestines, because, you know, celiac disease destroys the villi in the intestines and you can't digest properly. But I finally, after taking herbs and everything, I do not do conventional medicine because that would just wipe out whatever energy I have left. I have been using wheatgrass lately, and often if I don't overeat during the day, I can squeeze out naps enough to get up to 7 hours sleep, you know, using fresh wheatgrass. And I just want to share that with the world because it was such a revelation and such a help.
That is so interesting. This is the second time this week I've heard about wheatgrass as a possible remedy. I am going to try it out. I've always thought there was some connection between the gut and sleep that has not been looked at. I mean, there's obvious things. If you've got indigestion, you know, it'll make it hard to sleep, or an ulcer or something like that. But I think there are really subtle kinds of connections between those two systems, the enteric nervous system in the gut.
Yeah.
It's an ancient kind of system. It goes on, you know, more ancient than the brain. We had guts before we had brains.
Yeah.
And it's connected to the brain in very interesting ways. And people who have Giardia swear that this has been the cause of their
yeah.
insomnia. So I'm not at all surprised to hear this. I'm glad you finally found
yes.
this out.
It's not like it solved the problem, but it did help. So good wishes
yeah.
with your work, and thank you.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We'll see if we can get at least one more caller, and this would be Urbana and line three. Hello.
Hi. It's really interesting hearing about these extreme insomnia issues. For myself and lots of people I've talked to, it's less extreme, but it's an issue of waking in the middle of the night and then your mind gets going and you're solving the world's problems and you can't get back to sleep.
Mm-hmm.
And a number of years ago I had a chance to take yoga classes, and it was with somebody who, in the final yoga pose that you do is, I think, with a lot of different types of yoga, it's called a corpse pose where you relax. She also did some guided imagery about letting thoughts pass through and relaxing various parts of your body, including your tongue and your jaw.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to go into the whole thing. It wasn't all that difficult to explain, but then I also took a course on yoga breathing. And yeah, I realized with this corpse pose that I was with her talking softly to us every now and then, and I was drifting off into la-la land, and I was going through perimenopause at that point and waking up a lot in the middle of the night. And I thought to myself, well, maybe I should just try this in the middle of the night. And it took some practice, but with that and using breathing techniques, it gave my mind something to focus on besides the fact that I was awake. It gave me something to do other than to solve life's problems. That I began to be able to get back to sleep within just a couple of breaths. And
yeah.
I've modified some of those techniques myself over time, but I've never had a yoga teacher who said, oh, yeah, that's a good idea. I should teach those techniques to help people get back to sleep.
Mm-hmm.
You're not supposed to go to sleep in the
yeah.
yoga class.
Yeah.
But it seems to me that, you know, it might be of help for this kind of insomnia where you wake up and you can't get back to sleep.
Yeah.
In addition to other techniques like, for instance, turning the clock so you can't see the clock and other things that keep you from waking up completely.
Mm-hmm.
So that it's easier to get back to sleep. Doesn't solve the kind of things that people have been calling in and you're talking about, but it might help other, you know, the kind that I'm just talking about.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, those are time-honored techniques, the breathing and the relaxation of, you know, individual body parts. And, yeah, you can read about them. You can, you know, find them online along with lots of other things that people find successful. The guided imagery is also interesting. That can help get your mind off the sort of babble in your head where you're just this, you know, racing mind and just going from one, you know, I start making lists, you know, I go, okay, I have to do this tomorrow, I have to do that tomorrow. It helps sometimes to write those things down so you can get them out of your head. But the thing I love actually when I wake up in the middle of the night, which is pretty much all the time, is listening to books on tape. I have a Walkman, an old Walkman, and then I have a recorded book that, you know, because they don't make these anymore, so I'm going to have a real technological crisis. But I find that if I have the right kind of story going, usually a memoir read by a woman with a soothing voice, it can sometimes, it has to be interesting enough to engage my mind. But it can't be a cliff, you know, hanger. It can't be a page turner. Can sometimes lull me back to sleep. You know, it's kind of a, you know, your inner child wants, you know, tell me a story or something like that. But I actually like doing that.
Forgive me for interrupting, but I simply have to do that because we're at the end of the time, and there was so much more that we could talk about in there is in this book, and I really want to make sure that people who are listening know if you have sleep problems, if there is someone in your family, someone who is close to you who does. I think that you'll find a lot in this book. It might help you understand and might indeed offer some suggestions. The title of the book is Insomniac. It's published by the University of California Press by our guest, Gail Green, who is professor of literature and women's studies at Scripps College in Claremont, California. And Professor Green, thank you very much.
Thank you.